I remember sitting at home listening on the radio, and I heard this woman called DJ Sylvie on Radio Dublin. And she was saying things like, "Good afternoon, Zoblin, and welcome to the show," and all this. And then DJ Lee came on after her. And I was saying, "This is very exciting. This is brilliant. I'd love to be part of this whole thing." And I kind of said to myself, I used to kind of be into this radio thing. I used to listen to Stew Pot on BBC and all this. I said, I could have a go at this. So how can I get involved? So I just got very excited about it. That was Radio Dublin out in Chicor, which is now very much part of the news, I suppose, with people, you know, kind of saying what went on there. But these guys were kind of pioneers, and they were putting it out there, and there was a great excitement because it wasn't the old guard, it wasn't RTE just doing it and kind of in a patronising way broadcasting. It was people broadcasting for the people who actually wanted particular type of music and a particular type of approach to the whole thing. So that's really where I remember hearing it for the first time, and then I found a way to kind of inveigle my way into it.
And we hear stories about the stations being in back bedrooms and over chemist shops and all. Where were the stations located you became involved with?
Well, the first one was above a jeweller shop on Bachelor's Walk, Desborne Jewellers, and you went up a lot of stairs, and then you went up more stairs and more stairs, and we were at the very top of the building. I think that was for security. I think that was for the whole, you know, kind of when the P&T arrived, which was the Post and Telegraphs before they broke up and kind of made it into Aircom and whatever. Anyway, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, it was for safety, so that by the time they actually got to the top of all those stairs, you would be, you'd have your transmitter deregulated, you know, you'd have the valves out of it and all that kind of business, and you'd be ready to go. And it turned into a receiver rather than into a transmitter, which was one way of getting around it.
Can you describe the studios?
The studios were quite primitive, really. They were, they had two decks. We had a microphone in the middle and a little kind of mixer with just kind of four faders. One for a microphone, one for a guest mic or a newsreader, and then two for the actual decks that went through. We didn't really have very much advertising. That was in the first one in Capital Radio. Although we did play a few jingles from time to time. I think you had to actually take one plug out of something and put it into another if you wanted to actually play an ad break. So they were quite primitive. We used to get our traffic news from looking out the window to see what it was like on O'Connell Bridge from Bachelor's Walk. There was a separate area where you'd have a library and a bit of an office going on as well. So it wasn't all happening in one room, you know.
Did you ever feel you were acting illegally?
No, I don't think we. I think the spirit. I mean, I was only 17 at the time, so I just wanted to do it. So it wasn't one of those things where I felt that I was going to get put into prison or caught or anything like that. And I think it had been, when I joined it anyway, it had been going on long enough that I knew that people weren't actually going to prison for it. You know, it was becoming a bit of a crusade, and it was one of those situations where we were rebelling against the system, and most of the system actually agreed with us as well. And, you know, so from that point of view, it wasn't, I didn't think I was breaking the law.
What is your memory of that period in Ireland generally?
It was fairly bleak. It's not as like it is today. There were no, there might have been one McDonald's had arrived, and that was about the most colourful thing we had in the country. I remember Good Friday, we used to all sit on wet walls and we had nothing to do with our time. It was very much a very Catholic country, and we hadn't kind of, you know, kind of, our horizons were very kind of...
Simple.
Simple, yeah, exactly. I mean, our horizons were, you know, we only went as far as kind of outside our own front doors. We hadn't travelled globally. Ryanair hadn't really arrived on the scene. It was a very dark, very Catholic, very black, bleak sort of place, and the church and the government were controlling everything that went on, I suppose.
So before Pirate Radio, what did you listen to?
Well, I used to listen to a bit of Radio Luxembourg, dipping in and out all the time, so that, you know, you'd hear a bit of a song and then it would fade away and then it'd come back in again. I used to listen to BBC quite a bit. I liked Ed Stewart. I used to listen to a little bit of people like David Hamilton on BBC Radio 2, and You know, like they were, it was kind of an old style of broadcasting, but it was very exciting as well. And when you got one of these radios that was an FM radio that you could pick up the BBC in crystal clear sound, it was just, it sounded so professional. And I suppose it was inspiring. You wanted to do that kind of thing yourself, you know.
And what sort of music do you remember from that time?
The music we used to play a lot of would have been, well, I mean, it was the kind of late 70s, so we were coming into disco. The Capital Radio where I was working was a little bit more indie. It was like what turned out to be kind of a phantom. So you'd have a lot of rock music going on. But I think disco was really starting to happen. And so, you know, Saturday Night Fever was part of the whole scene. And, you know, Sylvester, You Make Me Feel Mighty Real. And, you know, those kind of songs that were kind of taking over all the dance floors in the country.
Tell us a little bit about ARD.
Okay, well, ARD was one that I joined in 1979, having had a little bit of a row with the guys in Capital Radio and storming out with my record collection, which turned out to be about half of their library. So I found myself standing at a bus stop on O'Connell Street with all these LPs beside me and trying to get home on the bus. And I think I organised the breakup with Capital Radio, and I kind of manipulated a bit of an argument so that I would be able to leave, because I'd already been offered a job in ARD by Bernard Llewellyn. And so I wanted to go there. So I had the argument. Then I was going to ARD. So ARD was in Bachelor's Walk. It was again up a lot of stairs, again for the different for the reason of security. But it was a much more professional setup. And Bernard Llewellyn was a bit of a visionary. Now, to be fair to him, he was a businessman, so he knew that it was commercial radio. He knew he was going to try and make a lot of money out of it, and I think he did make quite a few bob. But he got out of the whole thing before the licences were granted, because he felt that that was the right thing to do. But he had a very good professional setup. He had proper journalists working there, a lot of them who went on to become very well-known national journalists, like Gene Kerrigan and Pat Brennan. So lots of people worked together with him. He had a great newsroom going. Like Liveline, as we know it today, didn't exist on RTE, but Ronan Collins used to do a show called The Afternoon Phone-In. We used to do a kind of a, what probably was like a kind of what became the hotline on RTE, where people were phoning in the evenings, asking for particular songs, you know. So it was quite innovative in a way, and the studios were slightly better equipped than the ones in Capital, but not that much better. I mean, there was only so far you could go. And I mean, if you wanted to play a single commercial, like a 30-second commercial, they would be inside a cassette, which you would actually listen to the start of it. Then you'd take it out of the machine, then you put your finger into one of the little holes, turn it anti-clockwise so you got the very start of the ad, and then you lined up, you had two tape decks together, and you'd play them alternately so that you came up with your commercial break. So it was a bit basic, really.
Just to sum up the period in a sentence, what is your lasting memory of the whole time?
I felt anyway that I was starting off in a career that I was going to continue, and luckily I've been able to do that. And it just felt as if everybody that you met, anybody in that business, was thinking in exactly the same way as you were. And you felt you were in at the start of something that was going to kind of take over the country. And it did, I suppose. I mean, it's all settled down now. We've all got a bit more professional, and maybe another revolution is required. And I don't even know what that would be now, the way technology has gone. But it was, you felt you were there at the start of something new.
Ian Dempsey, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave.